One of Jesus' Galilean miracles is recorded by all four gospel writers, and it is one known as the feeding of the thousands. The gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, give their own accounts with varying details of this event in which Jesus turned one youngster's meager meal into enough to feed a very large crowd with leftover goodies to be gathered by his disciples. What precedes this account is very important. Jesus had just received word that John the Baptist, the one who prepared the way for Jesus' coming through the preaching of repentance, the one who had baptized Jesus to initiate his ministry, had been killed. By order of King Herod, he had been beheaded in prison. And this news had just reached Jesus. Jesus was deeply grieved and was seeking time to be alone, to deal with this very tragic personal loss. Hear this account from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 14, beginning with verse 13. Jesus heard what had happened to John. He wanted to be alone. So he went in a boat to a quiet place. The crowds heard about this, and they followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus came ashore, he saw a large crowd. He felt deep compassion for them. He healed their sick people. When it was almost evening, the disciples came to him. "There is nothing here," they said. "It's already getting late. Let's send the crowds away and they can go and buy some food in the villages." But Jesus replied, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Bring them here to me," Jesus said. And then Jesus directed the people to sit down on the grass. He took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he looked to heaven, and he gave thanks. And he broke the loaves into pieces, and he gave them to his disciples. And the disciples gave them to the people. All of them ate and were satisfied. The disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftover pieces. The number of men who ate was about 5,000, and the women and children also ate. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Have you ever picked up some food for yourself thinking you would be eating by yourself, and then you found yourself in that awkward position where other people were around without food, and you were rather hungry and wanted to eat, and you would have been glad to have shared, but there wasn't enough. My, how food multiplication would have come in handy then. I sometimes joke that I should have taken that class as an elective in seminary. Children who eat in front of others are sometimes rightly or wrongly scolded with the question, "Did you bring enough for everyone? Or did you bring enough to share?" The account from Matthew's gospel, which we just read, makes no reference to a boy bringing a meal of fish and bread. That would be the source of Jesus' miracle of food multiplication. Matthew simply states that Jesus told his disciples to feed the crowd, and they said, "We only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Other gospel writers, however, tell us that it was a boy who brought and willingly gave up his lunchbox on that day. Now, I really doubt that that boy had any idea that he would play such a significant role on that day. Rather, his mother probably said something to him like, "Yes, you can go if you wash behind your ears, wear your Sunday sandals, and take this lunch in case the preacher's long-winded and you get hungry." Again, it's worth noting that this event was not on Jesus's itinerary. Rather, Matthew reports that Jesus was grieved over the death of John the Baptist and simply wanted to be alone. So he took a boat to find a quiet place. However, the curious crowds didn't allow for such. And when Jesus arrived on the seashore, he encountered a very large gathering. Now, the natural response, which would have been my response, would have been to say, "Can't you see that I'm hurting? Can't you leave me alone for just a little while?" But that was not Jesus' response. He showed compassion, and he healed the sick among them. Now, it is crystal clear that the gospel writer Matthew was not a Baptist preacher. He counted only the men present and gave an attendance figure of about 5,000. A Baptist pastor would have counted the men, the women, the children, any visible sheep or cattle on the hillside, and then multiplied it by 3. This is one of those stories many of us learned as children, either through illustrated storybooks or, for my generation, through flannel graph. And teachers usually settled on 2 morals to the story. One, that we, like this little boy, should share whatever we have. And 2, that when we give to God, our gifts are multiplied. And those are 2 very important lessons for us to remember and to practice at any stage and age in life. Unlike some of my friends, I am not a numbers person. But the numbers in this account are impressive. 1 boy, 2 fish, 5 small pieces of bread, thousands of hungry people, and the results are full bellies and 12 baskets of leftovers. Am I the only one curious about what was done with the leftover food? None of the gospel writers tell us. 12 baskets full, no Tupperware, no saran wrap. We have to believe that Jesus turned that into another ministry opportunity. The lessons we were taught as children are good, important, timeless lessons, that we are to share what we have, and that when we share, God multiplies our gifts. But is there anything else to be mined from this event told by all 4 gospel writers? Well, it's enough if we embrace and practice those lessons taught to us as children. But there might be even more here. My Bible scholar friend Tony Cartledge writes, "The whole point of the story is that Jesus is the Messiah who provides bread in the wilderness, even as God provided manna to the Israelites. The 12 baskets of leftovers are more than an indication that each disciple returned with a full basket. They probably symbolize the 12 tribes of Israel." Therefore, I would add that this event was first an example of Jesus' great compassion, even when he would have rather been alone that day. But also, it is a lesson beyond his spoken words that the one who brought healing and full stomachs and full hearts on that day was none other than the promised Messiah. Have you noticed how preachers sometimes beat up the disciples when they tell this story? We expect them to expect the miraculous from Jesus, although Jesus didn't always do miracles, And sometimes when he did, he chided the disciples not to tell anyone. The disciples, as we read in verse 15, were being very responsible when they said, "There is nothing here to eat. It's getting late. Let's send the people away so they can go buy food in the villages." And I can only imagine that the disciples were probably getting hungry too. Now, John's account of this event carries some specifics that are not covered by Matthew's gospel that we just read. According to John 6, Jesus looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him. So he said to Philip, one of the disciples, "Where can we buy bread for these people to eat?" And John tells us that Jesus asked this only to put Philip to a test, that he already knew what Philip was going to do. According to John, Philip answered him by saying, "8 months' pay could not buy enough bread to give each one of these persons one bite." I wonder why Jesus tested Philip on that day. Perhaps he wanted to see how large of a vision the disciples might have. Could they dream big enough? My good college friend, Dr. Bill Birch, is pastor of the First United Methodist Church in Lawrenceville. And he said this passage reminds him that churches need both big dreamers and responsible realists to balance each other out. Bill notes that Philip was mathematically correct in the answer he gave, that if you took 8 months' salary, that would not be enough to give everyone here one bite of bread. Philip was mathematically correct, but he was wrong in that he did not factor into the equation who it was asking him the question. Very responsibly, the disciples called for sending the people away so they could go find needed food, but Jesus had another idea, one that came to no one else's mind. Perhaps there are a couple of more things that we can learn from Jesus here. One, don't be so rational that we limit God's capacity to work within us and within our world. Too often we put limits on God that are tied to our own limited visions and resources. But God can do more than any of us can imagine, plan, or afford. And a second lesson. What we consider to be too little to offer, or too little to make a real difference, can go a long way when offered to Jesus. In other words, we have more to offer than most of us believe we do. I was at a gathering years ago at which Tony Campolo, the American Baptist preacher and author and sociologist, was the speaker. In an earlier part of the program, a plea was made to raise $12,000 over the next year to provide needed wells and water purification systems to relieve specific communities in Africa of dreaded deadly disease. When Tony got up to speak sometime later in the program, he said, "I have good news to announce. We already have the money needed for this important project." And everyone cheered. And after a pause, he said, "And it's in your pockets." Abundance is always tied to generosity. One boy's lunch can go a long way when it's freely given and multiplied by the grace of God. Caroline Lewis teaches homiletics at Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she offers an important insight into this story. She says there is a sense that this story sums up discipleship. It is an invitation to action and involvement. That discipleship is just not about following, but participating. In this provision of food for many, the disciples witness that the promise of provision is their future, and Jesus signals this promise with one pointed phrase: they need not go away, you give them something to eat. In other words, you do it. I think she's right. This is important for us to grasp. For you see, the boy's generosity and the disciples' actions were met with Jesus' multiplying presence. But generosity and action started the process. Jesus expected them, the boy and the disciples, to do something other than watch. The Christian faith is not a spectator sport. It is participatory. We simply need to participate more faithfully, and we need to have more participants. Are you familiar with the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule, whether it's in a secular place like in sales or in church, congregational life? It states that roughly 80% of the effects come from about 20% of the causes. And studies consistently show that about 80% of the church's giving comes from about 20% of the congregation. And about 80% of the service, the work, comes from those same 20%. It would be stunning, even miraculous, if more of us were more faithful in our giving and service. In fact, someone would have to gather up the leftovers. The little family was not that little. They had 12 children. And they lived on a spread of land in a rural community. They were wonderful people, but some of their neighbors became quite jealous. It seemed that whatever the little family undertook, they did it better than everyone else. Their fence rows were straighter. Their apple trees bore more fruit. Their newly painted farmhouse gave off a brighter sheen. And their farmland produced bigger, better produce than anyone else. After years of talking behind their backs, finally some curious and jealous neighbors sent a representative to find out the Little family secret. And Mr. Little responded to the knock on the screen door, and he was asked point blank, "Why is it that everything your family does is done better than by the rest of us?" And he was caught off guard, and he scratched his head and pondered the question for a while. Then he smiled and replied, "Maybe it's because every little does a little." Imagine, with the multiplying impact of God's grace, what could happen If every little one of us just did a little. And now, imagine the even greater things that could be done for God's kingdom if we all did a little more than just a little. You know the question, don't you? Are we up to it? Not just watching, but participating in the multiplying, grace-filled mission of God in this place and in the world out there. Well, are we? Let us ponder that question and let us respond as we stand and sing together.